on a frequency, and I call it never talks about the same thing twice. Trucks and records in paradise, their frequency, she's got a frequency, and I caught it flying over me. Oh, now feel that sound rushing through the fields and flowers, her voice coming through my dial, she's the one, I swear to God, a frequency, she's got a frequency, and I caught it all over me. Can't hop a train or bicycle that far, but climb the oak tree in my backyard and I can hear it for a while. Yeah, how her voice bends as she smiles.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday morning. It is the 28th of September. A delight to have you with us. And wow, what a weekend. So we have a lot to talk about today. And it's, well, there's a lot to talk about. So we'll get right to it. Let me introduce everybody. And also, I want to invite you to join us. We would love to hear what you think about the news of the day. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Two quick notes. One is that Alan Chartok is not with us today. It is Yom Kippur, so he will not be with us today. We do have a wonderful panel, and at 9:30 this morning, we are going to be joined by Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston. He is a great investigative reporter, a specialist in economics as well as tax issues. He is the author of the book, The Making of Donald Trump. He has broken many stories on Trump and his taxes. He will join us this morning at 9:30 and be with the entire panel. Let me introduce the rest of the panel to you right now. Vice President of Editorial Development at the New York State Press Association, Judy Patrick. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
I am breathless. It's like, boom, what a weekend. Or what,
yeah.
what a Sunday.
Yeah, just Sunday afternoon. It was like, yes, boom, exactly. Well, thank you for being with us. It's a great pleasure always to have you on this program. Bard Center for Civic Engagement Senior Fellow and Dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University Cairo. Jim Ketterer, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well, thanks. And how are you, Joe?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking. I'm doing quite well, actually. It's, you know, I always like shows when I know we're not going to run out of things to talk about. That's that. those are good shows.
No trouble here.
Not a bit. Jennifer Burns joins us, UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Good morning, everyone.
All right. Well, good morning to you. Very nice to have you on the program. All right. Well, the big news, of course, is the bombshell that the New York Times threw out. And to make it sound that they threw it out there is somewhat disingenuous, because this is a story that they have been working on for at least 4 years, from what they say. And it certainly shows in the story itself. The Times investigation published on Sunday found that President Trump paid just $750 in federal income taxes each year in 2016 and 2017. The president, of course, denied all of this at a news conference using a familiar retort, fake news. The bombshell revelations report that the president paid no income taxes at all in 10 of the previous 15 years, and that he claimed major losses on his businesses, even as he publicly said that they were thriving. The Times said that Trump is fighting an IRS audit that could cost him over $100 million. This, of course, happens with less, just 30-some days until Election Day, but also one day before tomorrow's debate. All right, let's go first to Judy Patrick. Judy, what do you make of this? And there really is no other word other than bombshell, I think. I mean, there are many words, but bombshell pretty much does it.
Yeah, well, let me start by saying my niece was a volunteer for AmeriCorps in Alaska at a homeless shelter. She reports she paid more than $750 in taxes in the year that the president paid $750 in taxes. But more importantly, this is public service journalism at its finest. Without newspaper reporters or without reporters, the American public would not know this information, and the American public has a right to know this information. And it's more than just $750 in taxes, this obscene amount of taxes that he did not pay. It's about the strength of his finances, which is incredibly weak. He is a poor businessman, and that is, in many ways, why he has so much support among many working-class Americans. They view him as a great businessman. If you read the story, you will realize he is not a great businessman. And so I am encouraging everybody I know to read the full story. And as the story makes clear, there's more to come in the coming weeks. The reporters are still working on this. Dean Backhave, the New York Times editor, says expect to see more to come. This is not fake news. This is journalism at its finest. It's expensive. Please don't complain that you have to pay for this New York Times story, although I think there are, if you get one or two free, please go out and buy a local newspaper today. I want to mention also that this is six full pages inside the print edition. So it starts on the cover, and then there's six full pages of information, including a double truck full-color graphic. Yeah. Double truck are two facing pages. This huge graphic runs across it, and it explains the state of his finances. And again, he is not a good businessman, and the American public need to take the time to read the story, look at the graphic, and make their own judgment.
I will say, Judy, if both online and in print, the graphics that go with it, especially to be able to navigate online and to see the various businesses and the money they were making, there's so much detail. It's hard to just chalk it up as anything. To call it fake news is just silly, because there's so much here. And there is so much documentation, and there is so much detail. It's very, very difficult to look at it. Jim Ketterer, what do you make of this?
Well, you know, there's the question of, you know, how does this affect the politics of the presidential race? And as Alan and I have sparred about before, so he's not here to defend himself, so I'll just do the one-sided sparring. That I don't really think there's much center left in the American body politic. And so for those who already dislike President Trump, this is further confirmation of him being a bad businessman and being dishonest on his taxes. For those who do like him, it's fake news. The New York Times is not well regarded, to put it mildly, among his base. And if they do believe it, they see him as someone who was able to use the system to his advantage, and that's not a negative to many people who support him. And I think that gets to the broader question of how is the tax code really constructed so that someone can do this? I think we learned, as I recall, that last year Amazon paid little or no taxes on $11 billion of profit. How is it that people, that citizens, are not holding our elected members' feet to the fire and saying, you know, you need to fix these loopholes in the tax system that allow extraordinarily wealthy people to get away with not paying their fair share? I think unless there are specific illegalities here, then it's a question of somebody really gaming the system in a legal way, and that should be just as disturbing as if it's illegal.
2 points on what you just mentioned. Of course, the big question mark is any of this illegal? And those are big question marks, because it may very well be. Also, to your point about how this changes views, in the 2016 September debate with Hillary Clinton, the first debate that took place between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton went to great detail in talking about Donald Trump and his taxes. And he simply said in his reply to her, the fact, as she was saying, he didn't pay any taxes, that made him smart. So in some ways, we already know it's what a lot of us, I don't in any way want to gloss over this major story because it is huge and we certainly have more details than we've ever had before. But the fact remains, okay, Trump, I mean, we figured there was something there because he had been trying to hide the information for so long and keep it from being public. Well, now it's public. And the question is, yeah, will it matter? And is it any different than when he said, well, look, this makes me smart because I got away with it?
No, I think David K. Johnston, when he's on with us, he will explain where the problems are, because this is not just being smart. This is being deceptive. I think that's what the New York Times is trying to lay out, that there are problems here. And as the Attorney General from New York State is researching, it's not just a matter of having a great accountant. There are ways in which they are alleging that he is deceiving the IRS. Some people will argue that he's just being smart. But does he think this is a fair way to do it? He's been president for 3 years. If he thinks this is truly fair, I guess that's the reason he passed his tax code 2 years ago. But if he thinks this is unfair, maybe he should have done something to change the tax code. But apparently he thinks this is a good way to run America's tax system.
Jennifer Burns, your thoughts on this?
I it's interesting because, after I read this, I thought, okay, well, we knew. Or, there was enough information out there for us to make an intelligent, estimate that he was clearly evading taxes or finding loopholes, like Jim said, in how to not have to pay taxes. I really think his holdback, and the more and more I think about this, in putting his tax returns out there, is because he doesn't want the methods he used exposed. Because then it would lead to other people doing the same thing, which then would draw attention to all of the loopholes. And, he toes the illegal line sometimes and then still gets away with it, right? So if his methods are exposed, more people would do it. And that could cause a change, right? More attention on how our taxes are filed and what's going on. So I think it's more that, like the secrecy, because he thinks he is a great businessman by doing this and not having to pay taxes. And on top of that, I think it will build strength for him with his base, because so many of them are struggling businessmen, right? And so they see him as a struggling businessman. Yes, he's got millions, but it helps them dream, we'll get there. I'll get there too, right? And I can still be struggling but be this billionaire, right, even if I'm living in debt. And so I think I don't think it's going to hurt him very much. I think it actually is going to propel him with his base.
The New York,
and I think it's going to bring out these methods.
Right. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what the next couple of days, and of course, the debate conversation about this is going to be fascinating. Just before we go to a break, your thoughts on, I want to get to just some of the facts so we're all on the same page of what the New York Times reported. It is, as Judy said, it's a huge article, and I just want to break it down as quickly as I possibly can. Even though taxes on wealthy Americans have fallen sharply in recent decades, most still pay a lot to the federal government. A typical billionaire pays tens of millions of dollars in federal income taxes each year. President Trump, however, is different. Yesterday, the Times published an investigation of his finances based on thousands of pages of documents that had not previously been public. They show that Trump paid no taxes in 11 of the 18 years between 2000 and 2017. In both 2016 and 2017, he paid only $750. He was able to do so because many of his businesses report losing large amounts of money, which reduces his taxable income, and because he is engaged in questionable tax practices. Even while declaring losses, he has managed to enjoy a lavish lifestyle by taking tax deductions on what most people would consider personal expenses, including his residences, his aircraft, and yes, the much talked about $70,000 for hairstyling for television. The investigation found that as president, he has received more money from foreign sources and U.S. interest groups than previously known. The investigation found that Ivanka Trump, while working as an employee of the Trump Organization, appears to have received consulting fees, quote unquote, that also helped reduce the family's tax bill. And Trump is facing a series of large looming bills in the next few years, and it is not obvious how he will cover those bills. So those are just a couple of the things that we're dealing with. Judy, and any one of those is a huge story.
Every paragraph seems like it's a huge story, and the challenge, I think, is to get that information into consumable tidbits for the American public to consume, because there's so much. You're going to lose, you know, the licensing and lobbying deals with the Turkish business guy, and you're going to lose, you know, the fact that he deducted, you know, $2 million in property taxes in New York State when most people can't deduct more than $10,000. It's all these, you know, there's a thousand stories here, and there's more to come. And that's part of the problem with Trump. There's so much that in the chaos, the things get lost, and you get this amorphous sense of him. Again, I do think this is going to have an impact on his supporters. I do believe that if they take a hard look, they will realize he is not a good business guy.
Judy, I want to ask you this question.
Well, can we also say,
yeah, go ahead, Jennifer.
You know, the $72.9 million tax return that he received, that, I mean, is a big part of this story, too. I mean,
Huge part.
Many people in America, you know, they look around and you're like, I might get $1,000 or $3,000 or $4,000. $72.9 million,
which,
right, during this same period.
Which is acts almost as a loan to get to be paid back, which in taxes, which it was not. We'll get into much more of this when we come back. We do welcome your letters. We have a lot of them. I promise we'll get to them in a little bit. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Pulitzer Prize winning journalist David K. Johnston will join us in just a few moments. He has written extensively about Trump and his taxes, and he will be with us with the panel after this.
Give me a ticket to ride that train. Wind in my hair, nothing in my brain. Pop music made me go insane. Four on the floor and the tracks keep changing. Give me a ticket to ride that train. Not a train, but a private plane. It's an electric slide in my DMs.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Joining us this morning, Jennifer Burns, UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies, Jim Ketterer, Bard Center for Civic Engagement, senior fellow and dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University, Cairo, and Judy Patrick, vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association. Alan Chartok is not with us today. It is Yom Kippur, and he is off. We do welcome in this half hour David K. Johnston. David is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, worked for the New York Times for many years, and is the man who revealed Donald Trump's true net worth. He has uncovered so many tax dodges that he has been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States. His books include, and I think you'll get an idea of his beat just by the titles, Perfectly Legal, The Covert Campaign to Rig Our Tax System to Benefit the Super Rich and Cheat Everybody Else, Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. More recently, on the president, he has written two amazing books. We have been lucky enough to have him as a guest for both of them. The Making of Donald Trump, which came out just before the election, and It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. It's a great pleasure to welcome David K. Johnston to the program. How are you, sir?
Good. Glad to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you on the program. I know all of us here on the panel have a lot of questions for you and obviously trying to figure out what's going on here. So for you who have been covering this for so long and have been looking at Donald Trump specifically for so long, was any of this of what the Times exposed, was any of this a surprise to you?
Well, the details are very important to this story, but this comports exactly with what I've been reporting about Donald for years. And by the way, all the books by the insiders around him, Michael Cohen, John Bolton, Melania's girlfriend, the event stager, all of those books just confirm what I was telling people for years about Donald Trump. This is a very important package, though, because what it establishes is that when Donald Trump was tried twice, civilly, not criminally, for tax fraud in the past, he learned nothing. In that case, those cases, he forged tax documents and he fabricated deductions. And it's very clear from the material the New York Times has, which is called Tax Information, not the actual returns, that Donald has continued his practice of fabricating deductions and cheating the government out of money that it's owed.
So when it comes to the real issue, talk to us. Well, first of all, let me ask you the question that I think a lot of people are asking. Where would the Times get this information?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, we know that the project they did 2 years ago, where they flat out called Donald a tax cheat, that was documents that his niece, Mary Trump, had received when they were litigating how one of the descendants of one of Fred Trump's five children were cut out of the family fortune. In this case, I'm sure the source is not the government. There's no possibility of that. I've never had anybody in government in any grand jury proceeding I've covered in the last half century ever come from the government. So it's somebody who has an interest on the other side who had these records. They may well be bank records, that because Donald had to produce tax information for his banks. You know, you take out a mortgage loan, you have to give a bank permission to look at your tax return. But I don't know. It is significant, however, that the Times says that it doesn't have the tax returns. It has tax information. That's the IRS, if they audit you, they don't start off looking at your return. They look at the information that's been lifted off your return and put into government computers.
Mm. You had some information in your reporting several years ago. You had President Trump's 2005 tax return. You believe that the president, that Donald Trump sent that to you?
Yes. I mean, having known Donald and covered him for 32 years, longer than any other living journalist, my expectation is it came from Donald. The White House confirmed the accuracy of the document. And I think what Donald expected was that I would write a story saying, look, I made $153 million, and I paid a big tax bill, $38 million. Well, almost all of the tax he paid was something called the alternative minimum tax. And if you're a real estate developer and you're subject to that tax because of your real estate, you're not really paying the tax. You're paying the government and extending the government a zero-interest loan of that money, and then you get to take it back the next year or the year after. And what the Times report shows is that's exactly what happened. Trump got his AMT back. So it sort of blew up on him because Donald forgot that, I know enough tax that I've lectured about tax on every continent except Antarctica.
And they're deprived of that information, and you should take care of that as soon as we're allowed to travel again. When it comes to the takeaways of this particular information, this $72.9 million tax refund that is the subject of an audit by the Internal Revenue Service. So the same people who asked the obvious question of how does a man who on paper has so much money only pay $750 in taxes, if he pays taxes at all, how do you then at some point get a $72.9 million tax refund?
Well, Donald has tremendous income from the enterprises that he has. But the Times report makes clear that he's done what he has done throughout his career. Well, he poses as this modern Midas who everything he touches turns to gold. He makes lousy deals. He doesn't reinvest in his businesses. He just withdraws capital from them as fast as he can. And he found a way, which the Times doesn't fully explain, but I expect there will be more because the Times says there will be more stories on this, to take $1.4 billion of income tax deductions for 2008 and 2009. Nothing in the Times report, nothing in the materials I have on Donald suggests that he had the assets or the business size that would justify that size of tax deductions. And so once he was able to, once he took these deductions, they would come up for review. He then sought this refund. Any refund by an individual of $2 million or more is automatically reviewed by congressional staff. And that review kicked off further questions about his tax returns. And rather than settle this matter, Trump has been in ongoing dispute about it. And details of that are going to emerge either when the New York prosecutors get his accounting records, and I anticipate a grand jury will indict him, or something else happens that makes these records public.
Let me go to some of the other members on the panel. I'm sure have questions for you as well. David K. Johnston is our guest. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist. Judy Patrick.
So, David, thank you for all your great reporting over the years. I'm a big fan. My question to you is, after you finished reading the article, what big questions do you have, or where are you going to take this story next?
Well, I have a piece. Thank you for that. I have a piece that will go up at Raw Story today and at the news service I co-founded, dcreport.org, which is free and we don't run ads. It's public service. Basically showing how this points out that we're chumps. America has two income tax systems, separate and unequal. One is for the vast majority of us. If you're a worker, a stock market investor, a pensioner, the government verifies your income. Your employer tells the IRS, here's how much money we paid, here's how much tax we withdrew. And if you differ by as little as $10, the IRS computers take note of this. But if you're a business owner, a privately owned business like Donald Trump, Congress trusts you, and you report what you say was your income, what you say were your expenses, and unless you're audited, that stands. Well, your odds of being audited if you are a million-dollar income household are now down to less than 3%. So playing audit roulette, as it's known, cheating on your tax return, is a strategy a lot of people will follow. And we don't prosecute hardly anybody anymore for tax crimes. We prosecute a little over 1,000 people a year for tax crimes, and most of them are either involved in drug trafficking or they're public officials who were arrested in corruption enterprises.
So when it comes to the ramifications here of legally, what do you think those could be? Which is a different question, of course, what should be,
right.
but what could they be?
Well, I thoroughly expect that once Donald Trump's efforts to delay have run out, that the Manhattan grand jury will indict him as a major serial criminal tax cheat. There are other people who are vulnerable, and I'm sure prosecutors will make deals with people to testify against Trump in return for either not prosecuting them or lighter deals. The accounting firm that has these records, Mazars, has a terrible reputation for ethics and integrity. Apparently, Deutsche Bank has turned over its records to the prosecutors, according to David Enrich, who's the business investigations editor at the New York Times. And on the federal level, nothing will happen so long as Trump is president, because the Justice Department's position is you can't indict a sitting president. And Bill Barr, who we call his attorney specific rather than attorney general, is doing everything he can to turn the Justice Department into a personal protection racket for Donald Trump, not an organization seeking justice on behalf of the American people.
Jim Ketterer.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. Thank you for so much of this background information. Just wondering, you know, you're talking about the two different systems of tax collection in the country for the rich and then for the rest of us. Within the category of the rich, how far out of bounds is all of this by Donald Trump? Or is this, not to let him off the hook, but is this, if not common practice, at least something that's being done by lots of other people?
Well, that's a very good question, Jim. I think it's very clear from what the Times has, from what the Times reported 2 years ago, from my reporting on Trump, and particularly the record of the two civil tax fraud trials, that Donald Trump is deep into criminal tax evasion. And that's why the prosecutors need all the business records. They already have his tax records. They need the business records to show that the tax records don't line up with the business records. That's how you prove criminal tax evasion. There's a great deal of fraud going on at the high end. And I'll give you a simple example. Years ago, I reported in the New York Times on a man who obtained over $2 million of income through some business deals. It was in the public record in Securities and Exchange Commission filings, and yet he had reported to the IRS his annual income was in the low five figures. You know, it looked like he was a marginally successful somebody who managed to pay his bills. And the IRS didn't have a clue, because the IRS operates from the system we have where your employer reports your taxes. Your wages and your tax withholding. They don't have databases of real estate records. They don't track SEC records. I did get a law passed that requires a more accurate reporting of stock market profits after I wrote about this. But I know of a deal that I've held in my hands documents on a family that owned a $1 billion piece of New York City real estate. In the morning, the parents owned it. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the children owned it. There was no gift tax filed, it appears, but since I can't prove it wasn't filed, I can't run the story. All the indications point to fraud. And by the way, the IRS did a report on real estate transaction fraud and involving passing real estate onto your children, and they discovered state by state that the cheating rates range from a low of 85% in Delaware to a high of 100% in Ohio. It's rampant.
We're going to take a quick pause. We're going to come back. Jennifer Burns, I'm sure we'll have a question for you, and then we'll wrap up as we come back. David K. Johnson is our guest this morning. He is with us on the panel just until 10 o'clock, and we're talking about, of course, the bombshell that the New York Times has on the president's taxes. We'll continue that discussion right after this very quick break.
See me running with my hands up. It's only how I learn to play. You can't just wait for them to show up. You got to.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Jennifer Burns, Jim Ketterer, and Judy Patrick on the panel this morning. And we're joined just for the next few moments with the investigative reporter and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston, who has done so much work on Donald Trump's taxes as well as this overall issue of tax cheating. Jennifer, any questions for David?
Yeah, my question is, as, you know, the lawyers and people are digging into this, what are the ramifications, or are there any ramifications on his family members who are running these businesses, right? Because it's all convoluted now, because he's also got, you know, Jared and Ivanka in positions in the White House. But when they're not in the White House, they are running other businesses for him, right? So what is the ramification on them for participating in this racket?
Thank you, Jennifer. It's the two sons not in the White House, Don Jr. and Eric, who are ostensibly running the businesses, but remember that Donald called Eric dumb in public and asserted that as president he could run his businesses and be president, and maybe so, since we know he spends 5 hours a day on average watching Fox News and other television shows. Anybody involved with Donald is subject to being prosecuted for crimes they've committed. And that's because Donald is surrounded by people whom he compromises. He's tried to do this to journalists. He got a Wall Street Journal reporter fired by tricking him into doing something. He tried to do it to me, and I outsmarted him. His family members who have done things on his behalf could end up facing a conspiracy charge, and there are other criminal offenses. And going after them would be a way to pressure them to turn on Dad in order to save themselves. Donald absolutely would turn on his own family if he had to. He wouldn't think anything. He might be troubled a little bit about it, but push comes to shove, Donald will turn on his family. Donald sees everybody else as an object. You're not a human being to Donald. You're an object to be used or abused.
Jim Ketterer was making this point before you came on, David, which is, and Jim, I apologize if I screw this up, but you were making the real good point, which was, but how much of this is going to click in and make a difference in the election and with his base and anyone else who looks at this story, reads it in its, if they read it at all, and the other case being the people who look at this, as I noted earlier in the program, that in 2016 during the debate with Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump says, well, yeah, not paying my taxes makes me smart. There are people who are going to admire that.
Well, there are, and I don't think this story will change very many voters because it's done in the bureaucratic style of the Times, and it focuses on the specific hard evidence they have. Now, let me, as someone who's been in the opinion business for the last 12 years, imbue this with meaning. Donald Trump's businesses are the very businesses that have been hit hardest by the coronavirus. So he comes into office in bad financial shape, which the Times story thoroughly establishes and which I had asserted a long time ago. He really ran for president in 2016, as he had done in 2011-12, in an effort to bolster up his business deals by showing he was immensely popular. His own staff have all said, the people around him, he didn't expect to win. Once he was in office, he took countless actions designed to enrich himself, from making the Secret Service pay full retail for golf carts to stopping his motorcade on his way to the White House in front of his hotel, which signaled to anybody in the world, you want a favor from Donald Trump, you will pay tribute to Donald Trump. And in the coronavirus, why is he constantly denying this? Well, it's clear, at least to me, that it's because his businesses would collapse if he followed the science. He needs to keep his golf courses open. He needs to keep his hotels open. He needs to keep his eateries open if he's going to continue not to fall into bankruptcy. And so we have now seen excess deaths of over 200,000. If we had followed in the practices in South Korea, we would have about 2,000 deaths in this country instead of about 205,000. He's literally killed over 200,000 Americans because he's trying to prop up his business interests by denying the reality of this once-in-a-century virus.
In our final moments together, does that explain most of the decisions that we cock our heads and say, why in the world would he do that?
Yeah, Donald grew up in a horrible household. His father was a monster. His mother was cold and distant. And in this household, all that mattered was getting money. If you lied and cheated and stole and tricked people, that was just fine in his household. Donald Trump's father stole millions of dollars from the federal government. There was a congressional hearing about it. President Eisenhower threw a fit in the Oval Office. And remember, that's the man who had to order all those young men to their deaths on the beaches in France. when he found out that Fred Trump was ripping off a program to provide housing for the soldiers and sailors who survived the war, he went nuts. And Fred Trump came under investigation, but nothing happened. And that's part of the genius of the Trump family. They are a white-collar crime family. Donald is the third-generation boss of a white-collar crime family. They don't break legs. They don't kill people. They lie, cheat, and steal. They forge documents. That's how they make their money. And Donald is not a businessman. He is a cash extractor. Every enterprise that he's had, what he does is he reaches in and takes out cash as fast as he can. When I was covering him in Atlantic City for the Philadelphia Inquirer, other casinos were reinvesting in their businesses and making good profits. Donald, instead of refurbishing rooms in the Trump Plaza Hotel, he just had them paint over places where they'd been chipped or damaged. Flip the mattress over. Don't buy new mattresses. Don't put up wallpaper. That costs a lot of money. Just patch the paint. And eventually that strategy doesn't work, and the business fails. And that's because Donald is not a businessman. Business people, and I'm someone who's created a successful business, business people create wealth. Donald Trump is a cash extractor who does the equivalent of mob bust-outs of businesses, and that's what he's been doing in the White House. Donald and I are about the same age. You don't change at this age. You're cooked.
Let me ask a final question, because I know you have to go, and I thank you so much for being so wonderful with your time. Let me ask this. There was a story, I believe it was in the Times, about just a few weeks ago about the campaign and the money that was being hemorrhaged with, that has been hemorrhaging from the campaign. And
Yes. That's
that ultimately a microcosm of what we're seeing in the larger businesses? Because they talk about, you know, the money that was being spent for consultants and so forth and here and there.
Right.
And they had a huge amount of cash that now seems to pretty much have dwindled away.
The Trump campaign burned through $1 billion in a matter of months. Brad Parscale, the manager of the campaign, is right now in a mental institution because his wife called the authorities last night at their home in Florida
Right. Because
he had a gun and was threatening to harm himself. The fees that were paid out in various ways suggest that this was an effort to rip people off, and that goes to the amazing amount of money, over $100 million raised for the inauguration, when there's no evidence they spent more than a few million dollars. Who got the money? Where did it go? That needs to be thoroughly investigated. And Trump is now not able to raise a lot of money. Joe Biden, who early on was struggling for money, now has more than $100 million more than Trump. In August, he raised more than three times as much money as Trump. And that's because a growing number of people are turning away from Trump. And for Donald, this is a nightmare because his plan, once he became president, was to become our dictator. It's been credibly reported that he has proposed that he run for re-election, was proposed with Ivanka as his vice president, and that he wants her to be president. And of course, he says all the time, I'm going to be president way beyond my 8 years. He's not joking there. He admires Vladimir Putin, MBS in Saudi Arabia, Erdogan, Duterte, dictators around the world who seize power. And notice Donald repeatedly said he won't promise that he will see to it we have a peaceful transition if he's voted out. He is not a Democrat, small d, in the sense of believing in democracy and self-rule, this radical idea that we adopted 224 years ago. He is, in fact, a wannabe dictator. And if he gets another term, by the end of that, that will be the end of the American democracy as we know it.
Well, on those words, let's just pause to thank you. David K. Johnston has been our guest on the panel this morning. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist. His books include The Making of Donald Trump and It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. David, we all thank you very much for being with us, and we so appreciate the time that you've given us.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. We're going to return. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the whole panel. We'll let them talk next, right after this. Yeah.
up the street, I'm gonna take you there, take you rooftop dancing. Summer throw my body in the air, making the jump from ledge to ledge. Long hair fly, we're out of breath, we're rooftop dancing.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 8 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Monday, the 28th of September. Joining us on the panel this morning, UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies, Jennifer Burns, Bard Center for Civic Engagement, Senior Fellow and Dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University, Cairo, Jim Ketterer, and Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick. Alan Chartok not with us today. It is Yom Kippur. And, of course, the last half hour we had David K. Johnston on the program talking about the big story today, which is the president and his taxes. Judy, quite a lot to take in from what David was saying as well.
Oh, there is. And, you know, he didn't even get into all the money that Donald Trump owes and is supposedly having to pay back in the next 4 years. If he wins re-election, he's going to be facing at least $421 million in loans that need to be repaid. And that doesn't even include the potential $100 million he may have to repay to the federal government if this tax refund case goes against him. And the question is, how will that affect his ability to be president? If, you know, will a bank foreclose on the sitting president? It's this whole notion of why a president needs to put his assets into a blind trust when he assumes office. I had a Trump supporter online believing that he doesn't receive any income from his businesses now that he's president, that his only income is the money he receives as president and donates to charity. That's just not true. And so many Americans don't know the truth. And so so much to digest. I agree with David K. Johnson that it's hard to get this information out to the public in ways that they can understand. I think it's up to the press now to take this information and run with it in bits and pieces. I think you're doing a good job right now, you know, trying piece by piece to get this information out.
By the way, one of my great joys over the last several hours has been reading your back and forth, Judy, with online with Trump supporters. It's quite amusing, and you're very good at the rebuttals. Jim Ketterer.
Yeah, I just want to echo what Judy had said before, too, about the importance of investigative journalism and journalism in general. When our newspapers are and other media outlets are, you know, under such financial stress, we need them more than ever, and people really ought to consider supporting those institutions that do this kind of important work, not just on this case, but on other cases. And I also just want to reiterate, after hearing what David had to say, that beyond the specifics of this Trump case, which to me, or I think anybody who is from anywhere near New York, is not surprising, you know, that if you had asked most New Yorkers, if, you know, even 20 years ago, do you think Donald Trump is a tax cheat? You know, most of them would have laughed and said, yeah, of course. You know, the broader issue about the way that people who are extraordinarily wealthy game the system. And that, you know, I think every member of Congress should be pressed hard, very hard on this and say, what are you going to do to fix this? What is your plan to fix this? And if you don't have a plan, we're going to vote for somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer, it strikes me that you have so many people who are out there who are out of work and at one point were getting $600 and now aren't getting anything. And they are waiting for some sort of relief, and it probably isn't going to come anytime soon, if at all. And they are completely out of luck. And then you see the opposite of that, where someone has millions and yet is not paying anything and has no interest in trying to help people who who are out of work and have nothing.
Well, and that's, you know, people have been saying this about the Trump administration for quite some time. But because everyone is so overwhelmed with just trying to survive daily, and it's so difficult to get at all of the little details, you know, that they, what is the concerted effort they can put together that will put food on their table at night and get out there to vote and, you know, follow all the news and the facts? It is so overwhelming for the average American, you know, to be able to make this happen in the pandemic. And we have to remember, people are getting sick all over. Schools have gone back in or virtual, and cases are popping up all over. You know, this is reverberating into everyday households. You don't even know if you'll be evicted. So without a relief bill, to hear this news is, I guess, another crushing blow with really, what is your recourse? What do you do if you're the average American? Wait a couple of months to the election and vote, right? That's the answer right now. And that's a really hard thing to do every day when you're trying to get by. So, I think that this story about Trump is what many of us have already known. And yes, it's a bombshell. And yes, it supports his behavior, right, in all aspects of his life that many of us have known. But at the same time, your recourse is wait and see until election day, right? Get out there and try to make a difference, but also try to feed yourself. Keep your kid in school. Try to find a job. This is a really hard time for Americans. And many Trump supporters, I think, in his base are facing some of the similar things, but have bought into fighting a battle about having their God, we'll say, because some of them observe that him that way, in power, right? I mean, it's a very scary time. It's a very scary time. And with the debate tomorrow night, it'll be very interesting to see how this goes between he and Biden with the Supreme Court nomination that he has appointed, you know, out there and looming.
We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We have a lot of letters here, so I'm going to get to as many as I can. And we still welcome yours, but I'm going to go through them here. Panel, if you have anything to say about any of these, please just speak up. I appreciate it. Beth says, taxes are the price we pay for freedom. Trump is unwilling to pay his share, and he is proud of the fact that he can game the system so the other suckers have to cover his lack of payment. He has no morals and values. Joan says, I'm disgusted with Trump as a leader and human being regarding taxes. If no laws were broken, he probably didn't do anything wrong. Everybody wants to pay as little as possible. It's a problem with the tax code and another example of it. If you have money, you get experts to help you do that.
Right, but the issue is whether or not he did anything wrong. Hey, and I have a question. Do you think he qualified for one of those $1,200 stimulus checks that people under a certain income got?
That's a great question. That's a very, very good question. Bill says, I recall there was already a report back in 2016 about the tax loophole that is designed and exploited by real estate developers that allows them to report the losses of their subcontractors on their own taxes, which resulted in him declaring a net loss of almost $1 billion, which meant he was covered tax-wise for something like 10 years. Dixie says, let's remember that any quote-unquote fixing would have to involve Mitch McConnell getting the Senate on board. He has no interest in doing anything to help regular citizens, this in regard to fixing loopholes in the tax code. If he did, people wouldn't be going without food and losing their homes during this pandemic. Jim says the Trumpers will not go to buy the paper. It is a major story to you. Trumpers don't care. I think he doesn't want it out because he doesn't want people to know he is a big hat, no cattle guy. Anthony writes to us and says, I need to preface this by saying I'm no fan of Trump, but it is important to understand that tax returns can only give so much information. I read the Times article, and although it is insightful, I couldn't help but feel it was slightly sensationalized. Trump's taxes reveal less about Donald Trump's finances than they do about the problems with IRS taxing regulation. Some advocates, even those in the 1% like Warren Buffett, have been making statements like this for years without seeing the financial documents of each individual company. The tax return only shows that he has really good accountants. Judy, you were going to say.
No, You know, I disagree with that, because if you included in the article is reference to the credit card receipts. So they have a lot of data about Trump's financial dealings. It's not just, you know, whatever's on a particular line. They could chart the success or failure of the different hotels, because they had the credit card receipts from a particular bank for that establishment. So I think they have far more information. I think they did far more reporting. They may have some basic tax information, but they went further. Remember, they've been working on this for several years.
It's really, yes, quite incredible the time that's been put into this reporting. Steve writes, my tax payments are never the same in any year. Why are Trump's exactly $750 in two different years? I'm sure there's a reason, but I have no idea what it is. Do you think, asks Erica, that Trump's tax and business fiasco, as exposed today in the New York Times, may be the reason Trump seems so beholden to Putin? Is he expecting the Russian oligarchs to bail him out? His debts are coming due soon, and he will be in big trouble.
Yeah, I just want to say that that's exactly the kind of question I wanted to ask David if we had had him for longer. That how does this connect to broader issues of Trump's dealing with Deutsche Bank, with Russians, et cetera?
And it isn't. It seems like a natural question to ask, right? It's a great letter, because it is something that you do wonder of. Okay, well, what else would explain this behavior? And that is one thing that explains that behavior. Not that there isn't another reason, but. It does help to explain it, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, I think it does. It definitely does. But at the same time, even the Times has said that, you know, there was nothing in what they've found that is connecting Trump to Russia, right? And that, I think, is a big point when we're thinking about his base or thinking about people who kind of glom on to his it's all fake news, because that one thread is easier to follow than all of this other overwhelming information, right? And he, and I think his campaign and his team, is going to glom onto that one thing. You know, you see, even with the information they got, I have no ties to Putin. And so he's going to spin that one little piece and be stable, like just continue to nail that piece in, right? Nail that home to distract everybody from the big mess that they have to try to dig through to get at other facts.
Stephanie writes to us and says, I recently had a discussion with a Trump supporter. We were discussing the ultra wealthy paying their fair share of taxes. He stated, quote, I don't care what the wealthy pay for taxes. I then explained the connection between taxes paid and federal and state programs funded, a connection he has either been programmed to ignore or honestly didn't understand. Trump supporters have been groomed to not care what Trump's taxes are. It's pretty scary and also interesting. Panel, what do you think the answer is in combating this? Anybody have an answer for Stephanie?
Yeah, I would say I think, and Jennifer was saying this before, you got to get out and vote. That's one thing, and you've got to make sure you know who you're voting for and what their positions are. Joe, if I could just take a bit of a side note too on voting, that you know, we can see even in this area the obstacles that are continually put up to getting people to vote. We can see at Bard College, which is a national leader in registering students to vote and turning out the vote, that they have had to file a lawsuit against the Dutchess County Board of Elections to try to have a voting location on campus that would be safe, that would be reasonable, and all of those sorts of things. These kind of unreasonable obstacles that are put up to people turning out to vote, particularly young people, who are the turnout numbers are low. And even when you've got an institution like Bard that's doing all the right things, and you can, Bard is just one case. I think it was just a big case in Georgia where the same thing was happening. And we can then multiply that across the country, not just student voting, but voting in general. But people have to find a way to surmount those obstacles and get out and vote as one piece of it, and do it in an informed way on these particular issues that matter to them.
Is it that story of Bard? I'll promise I'll get right to you, Jennifer. The story out of Bard is fascinating to me, because this, as you say, they are a leader in getting students out to vote. So what's the rationale being used by the county?
You know, I think I know the Bard rationale that that the voting location they have on campus is it's more accessible to non-drivers. And if anybody's been to the Bard campus, you know that's not a campus you can kind of easily walk from into the local towns. Parking, it's larger. Larger matters a lot these days during the pandemic. It complies with the Americans for Disabilities Act. All of these things. And honestly, I don't think, to my knowledge, that there is a strong argument on the other side. We know that that particular district voted, I think they voted for Trump in 2016. It's been a purple district. They've had Republican members of Congress. Now, they in 2018, they elected a Democratic member. So it's a toss-up district. And I think these are the sorts of games that people play when they're trying to, tamp down the vote in a toss-up district.
A form of voter suppression. Jennifer, you were saying, I'm sorry.
And the recent story out of Pennsylvania is very important, too, when it comes to voting, right? That for this is the first time that Pennsylvania is doing mail-in ballots. And there's two envelopes that people have to use in order for their ballots to count. They have the sort of secrecy ballot or secrecy envelope, right? So you pick your candidate, you put it in the secrecy secured envelope, and then you must also put it into the mailing envelope. If this secrecy envelope is not included, your vote doesn't count. So following those kind of procedures in places, and we know Pennsylvania is a really important state in this next election, you know, matters a lot too. So that kind of, you know, I don't want to say trickery, but, you know, having those extra steps in there, if you are not careful and don't pay attention to that, then you are thinking you're out there voting and you are not, right? Because your vote won't count. And so those are all those other little intricate ways that voting suppression is happening. Aside from, you know, where you can't get to a polling spot, you have this extra envelope thing to pay attention to.
Can I also make a pitch for people to be active on social media? As much as people denounce it and don't want to get involved, I believe that we need to go forward and embrace the conversation. I try to make a practice of, if I find something wrong, I try to present people with a fact in a really neutral way, because for the long haul, we need to get everybody more thinking better about what our country is and what the facts are. So you may find yourself in a name-calling situation. You just have to neutralize that and engage people. It's sometimes I use it like the starfish in the sea. There are a million of them. How can you throw all of them back? Well, you have to do one at a time.
Well, bless you for doing it. It's very difficult, but I understand why it's important. Let's see, just a couple more notes here from listeners and before we go to a break at the bottom of the hour. And we welcome your letters at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Janet writes, in reading the headlines and emphasis of most news stories this morning, I feel like they're focusing on the wrong thing. The fact that he paid $750 in taxes is ridiculous for sure. But many will gloss over that as that's just the fact that he had good accountants. The bigger story, in my opinion, is that his massive debt is $400 million due in the next 4 years, maybe as much as $1 billion in total owed, and the apparent tax fraud. That is what really needs to break through to have any impact on supporters, if that is even possible, which I doubt. Side note, will this finally be the story that sticks? Anyone want to take a whack at that one?
Oh yeah, this is a story. This is the story. This story will stick. This is equivalent to the to the tapes from 4 years ago.
The Access Hollywood tapes.
Yeah, the Access Hollywood tapes. This is significant. Don't gloss over the impact of this and what is to come in the days ahead. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I think there is substantially more damaging information to come. Now, there also could be an October surprise for Biden. You never know what the next 40 days are going to bring.
Ron writes, the idea that Trump pays little in taxes won't matter to his Republican enablers. They simply are using Trump to serve their financial sponsors who want to kill environmental safeguards, put right-wing zealots on federal courts, and want even more tax cuts for the super rich. It won't matter to the Fox News audience. They'll accept whatever snake oil Trump continues to peddle. And it won't matter to the hate mongers whose bigotry and ignorance Trump will continue to spout. How to fix the problem? Campaign finance reform, a public that pays real attention, an end to a system where legislators choose their voters instead of the other way around. We should look at term limits as well. That from Ron. We go to Jack, who says, how many of us over the past 4 or 5 years have uttered, if only we could see his taxes, thanks to the New York Times, in what must have been a long and expensive project of writers, forensic accountants, and lawyers, we finally have a broad, detailed, but incomplete picture of the Trump empire. Of course, the Trump empire is little more than Trump himself. It is not illegal to take advantage of every tax break the laws provide, but it is quite another thing to manipulate and manufacture the numbers. It is hard to read the elements of the Times' reveal without thinking that Donald Trump is up to his lips in tax trouble. Multiple counts of fraud and evasion await. I would just like to hone in on one part of that. Judy, maybe you could talk. We have to go to a break. But when I come back, I'll ask you about this. The fact that of how lawyered this story must have been. Oh, God. Pretty amazing. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll move on to other topics as well. There are other many major stories to discuss. We'll do that with our panel, Jennifer Burns, Jim Ketter, and Judy Patrick. We will first take this break and be right back.
When I saw you from across the board, it occurred to me we never could be, though I hadn't thought that far. In the way I hadn't thought it, it kept floating back upwards. Oh, never kept on ringing, ringing, though I never used the word. It's a ring, I'm running around it, babe. It's a ring, it's safety and
welcome back to the roundtable and to our last go-around on the panel this morning. About 15 minutes left of conversation with our wonderful panel. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Jennifer Burns, Jim Ketter, and Judy Patrick join us. Oh, by the way, over the weekend, a Supreme Court justice was announced, a nominee for the Supreme Court. Trump announced that Judge Amy Coney Barrett is his pick for the Supreme Court. This, of course, the name had been batted around all last week as the top pick and expected, and the president made it official on Saturday that he will nominate Federal Appeals Court Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, a choice that would lock a conservative majority on the high court and that would help turn out Republican voters in the election less than 6 weeks away. Barrett is 48 years old, would fill the vacancy left by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, preserving the court's gender balance of 3 women and 6 men while potentially tipping the ideological balance for decades. Trump introduced Barrett in a Rose Garden ceremony attended by a who's who of Republicans and conservative activists, a reminder that shifting the Supreme Court to the ideological right has been a decades-long focus for Republicans. Jim, what do you make of this pick and ultimately what impact it will have for the immediate moment, meaning the election, and the far-reaching impact for years to come?
Yeah, you know, I continue to think that the election is all about turning out the base on both sides, and that there's not much middle left, if at all. And this, I think, has the potential to motivate the base on both sides. It doesn't seem like there's any real way to stop it in the Senate. The Democrats can engage in some kind of slow rolling measures, but I think that might harm them if they're looked like just sheer obstructionists. If there is, in fact, any middle left, I think we can see already some kind of interesting politics playing out about Catholicism And Trump won the Catholic vote in 2016, but just barely. So I think that's an interesting element to it. And I would also just add that there was a fascinating article in the New York Times this weekend about a lunch that President Obama had with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and gently brought up the idea of maybe her retiring when the Democrats still controlled the Senate, as they did in 2013. And she was such a rock star that it's hard to be critical of her. But the idea that people will hang on to the very end on the court and then end up in this situation, I think, is something also worth thinking about going forward.
That article was fascinating because it talked about just how dicey it is to talk to an 80-year-old jurist and say, "Oh, so what are your plans?" You know,
right?
It is it's an awkward conversation to have. Jennifer,
I think one of the most powerful things right now happening is that Barnett's election or nomination by Trump is really going to shift the tide or thinking for many of the suburban women and evangelical suburban women that Trump has trying to court, again. So I think that is definitely really a very strong piece here that all of us have to consider, right? Because though many of us look at Ginsburg as this trailblazer for equality and civil rights and that sort of thing, there are men and women out there who see Barrett as an equal trailblazer for those traditional values that the Republicans and Trump in particular have been trying to revive, right? And so I think that right there is a major, major piece for how he's trying to win over anybody who was kind of tipping a little bit toward Biden by choosing her, the suburban women.
Judy.
So I think the horse has left the barn on this one. I think Mitch McConnell is going to push this through before the election because that's what matters most to him. And the impact on the election is going to be, I think, a lot of people who really want a conservative Supreme Court are going to say, hey, I got all the people I need. I mean, I don't need a unanimous Supreme Court in my favor. I think it will disincline people who are worried about the Supreme Court to vote. I don't think Mitch McConnell cares. I think he's going to lose a few Senate seats because of it, because he's not motivating the base. If it happens before the election, that base is not going to be motivated to get out there and vote. Why bother? They've got what they wanted.
Let us talk for a moment about the polls and the latest polls to have come out. Obviously, as I was putting the stories together yesterday afternoon, I thought to myself, oh, well, this is, really solid. We can talk about the latest things of what impact Ginsburg's passing and this pick and so forth have on the polls. And then, of course, there's now this bombshell of the tax information. So somewhat we still wonder. But the Washington Post ABC poll has Joe Biden maintaining a lead over Trump nationally in a relatively what they refer to as a relatively stable race. You've had two political conventions, the continuing spread of the coronavirus, an economic dislocation, more racial upheaval, and a coming battle over a Supreme Court vacancy. But the race for the White House remains stable, with former Vice President Joe Biden holding a steady advantage over President Trump, according to the poll. Biden and Kamala Harris lead Trump and Vice President Pence by 53% to 43% among registered voters, statistically unchanged from the 12-point margin in a poll taken in August, just before both parties held their conventions. Biden and Harris also have a 10-point advantage among likely voters, 54% to 44%. Biden's lead narrows to 6 points among likely voters, 49% to 43%, and among registered voters, 47 to 41%, when Libertarian Party nominee Joe Jorgensen or Green Party nominee Howie Hawkins are included as response options in the survey. A sizable gender gap continues to fuel Biden's lead, with women making the difference in the current state of the race. Trump has a lead of 55% to 42% among men, male likely voters, but Biden has an even larger 65% to 34% advantage among female likely voters. Trump's lead among men is about the same as his margin over Hillary Clinton in 2016, but Biden's lead among women is more than twice as large as Clinton's was then. My question for the group here, and Judy, let me begin with you, is that all of the issues that seem to be coming up, whether it's the handling of the coronavirus, people say they favor Biden. If it comes to the polls that are coming out, who should be making this pick for the Supreme Court, people say it should be who wins the presidential race. The question over going back to school, the question about reopening the economy, the question of all seem to lead in Biden's favor. My question is then what is the president doing to counter any of that? Because everything he seems to be doing, the polls would indicate, is the opposite.
Right. You know, he made this pitch for the Law and Order campaign a few weeks ago, and he still continues to bang that drum quite a bit, but it's not giving him any traction at the polls, apparently. It gives him traction among his base, and I think he's still worried about getting that base out. But the coronavirus, he's not moving anywhere. Although, again, it still amazes me that any percentage of Americans think he's doing a good job on the coronavirus. What are they thinking? And on a number of issues. But I think for his own sake, I mean, he must have some internal polling that says that people don't care about the coronavirus, but we know they do, and that they care about law and order. And again, the chaos in the street that he likes to depict. It's not there. He thinks it, but I think he's just appealing to his base and actually trying to get even people to the right of his base to turn out. And that's where he thinks his success will lie.
Jennifer?
I 100% agree. And I think that's also the push, right, for Barnett as the Supreme Court justice and get that in, because I fully believe he's trying to win back, in particular, white women, suburban voters. He's really pushing to draw them in, right? And this the scary part to me about the Barnett pick, aside from the fact that she,
Barrett.
Love the fact, I mean, she's brilliant. Barrett, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
She's brilliant. She's, you know, all of these great things. However, at the same time, there is a false narrative running, right, that's running here. Yes, she has a large family. She's happily married and she's successful. But it's really tying into that old story of that women can have everything. They can be brilliant hands-on mothers, right? It's linking them consistently to mothering. And for many women in America, not most, but many, it is a challenge to mother and have a profession without a very large network of support and financial means. So I think the story makes many women feel comfortable, caught up in that dream, but it is a dream. It's not a full reality, especially in the pandemic, especially right now with how our economy is headed. So that's where my fear lies, but I think the dream entices people and it makes them feel comfortable and they'll buy right into this. They'll go towards a Trump vote if they were debating before, some of them.
Mm. Jim Ketter.
And he's showing that he's supporting the suburbs, right? Protecting them.
Mm-hmm. Jim?
Yeah, on the protecting the suburbs, I think that, you know, we'll continue to see the Trump campaign double down on this message that our urban centers across the country are violent hellscapes. And though the statistics show that violent crime continues to remain low, and it has for many, many years, that's a message he feels like he can sell to the suburbs as a way to protect them and to swing their vote in a way that, you know, he knows that he's not going to get many votes in the urban centers across the country anyway. So use them as the way to bang that drum.
And I guess You know, there's so much coming. There's so much out there. There's so, I mean, well, I can't keep track of it all. I don't know about you all. I can't keep track of it all. You go down a rabbit hole and you say, okay, I'm completely immersed in the story about the president and the handling of the coronavirus. And you say, okay, we're going to go down. And then now you're whiplashed over into the taxes. And then another horrible thing will happen on the streets of this country. And we'll again be talking about the injustices and racial injustices that are done. And is it the last thing that plays on the jukebox that is going to stick? Or is it another way of asking this is, aren't we all exhausted and shouldn't we just vote today?
Yes.
But I don't know. Is it the last thing? Go ahead.
I agree with you. You know, it's like you get lost in the weeds. There's
and we have
so
30
much
seconds,
always
but go ahead.
Coming, right?
Yep.
There's so much always coming that you don't know where to begin and you get lost up in it. And it's all so depressing. But I will say, I think that's one of the things to pay attention to. And Biden needs to be prepared for strongly in his debate tomorrow night is that he cannot get lost on these little bits of chaos that Trump throws out there. He really has to stay focused. He cannot meander. He cannot do all of those, you know, lost and try to appeal to people. He's got to really stick with the facts and lay out over and over and over again exactly what he's proposing to do and not get caught in the name calling and all of that, that Trump is Trump style.
A terrific discussion this morning. My thanks to Jennifer Burns, Jim Ketterer, and Judy Patrick, as well as David K. Johnston. Thank you all so much. I really appreciate it. Be well. We'll be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.